Now, if you listen to our political classes, Australia's plan for handling a rising China and a waning US in our region is pretty simple. Find some like-minded neighbours, form an alliance with them, and from there, a new international order is sure to follow. Or is it? As a timely new issue of the magazine Australian Foreign Affairs titled Friends, Allies and Enemies suggests, that plan has some obstacles to overcome. For instance, what does like-minded mean in a contested Asia where different countries have different priorities? And how committed is Australia really to lessening our reliance on the US? Jonathan Perlman is the editor of Australian Foreign Affairs, and he joins me now for a quick preview of some of the themes in his new issue. Jonathan, hello and welcome.
Hi, Geraldine.
You've titled your issue Friends, Allies and Enemies, as I say, a reference to the ambivalent relationship Australia has with countries in our region. Do you and the contributors in this issue, Jonathan, feel it's clear who is a friend, who's an ally, who's a potential enemy?
There's a range of views in this issue, and I think a lot of the disagreement goes to how much can we really rely on other countries in this region for our security? I mean, we've become very used to relying on the US, and we're now starting to wonder, can Australia rely on the US, and how committed is the US to providing securities for countries like Australia and Asia? But there's disagreement about how much Australia is going to be able to rely on other countries. Can, for instance, you know, we talked about the Quad earlier, would the Quad be able to turn into some sort of alliance where countries would come to each other's aid? There's a lot of, I would say overall, there's doubt about that, about the real security implications of these relationships in the region, which still kind of, you know, raise question marks for how this plan by the federal government is going to work.
Mm. You say in your editor's letter that the big question for Australia, really, is how we handle China as the US influence in the region declines. And what you're not convinced of is that the solution, the alliances with like-minded neighbours, is viable. Why not?
It's just not clear yet. I suppose there are two aspects to it. The first is, who are the like-minded partners with which we're going to form these sorts of relationships? And as I said, I'm just not sure that those relationships are going to be anywhere near an equivalent to a US-style alliance where countries effectively come to each other's aid in case of war. Because countries in the region have such different interests, and particularly different interests when it comes to China. And the other concern really is that Australia doesn't seem to be doing much to put this plan into effect. We're seeing you know, the kind of diplomacy that you would expect to sort of back this up is not really occurring. We're not seeing, you know, we're seeing defunded of roles. So we're not really seeing anything other than the rhetoric. We're not really seeing any efforts by Australia to reach out to neighbours in the region, and particularly Southeast Asia, where aid's been in decline and there's really been a kind of, you know, dwindling focus on Southeast Asia. Well, that's not what you'd expect if Australia was going to be able to achieve these kind of relationships.
Yes, we've been trying to report on that too. I mean, you say that Australia's often proved skittish when it comes to neighbouring countries. As you say, we talk about friendship, but then we cut aid. And we don't entirely treat our neighbours as equals. And did you say, or one of your contributors, that, for instance, we didn't even ring an Asian nation before we called for the inquiry into the origins of the coronavirus? We rang European counterparts, but not Asian nations. I was really quite surprised to read that.
That's right. I did note that we first called Trump, Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron, and I think Boris Johnson was still in hospital and we probably would have called him, but called no Asian nations.
Not even Lee in Singapore.
Unbelievably not. So, you know, it's very surprising, and yet there is a track record to this. This is not just some that was an oversight in the middle of the pandemic. Because other contributors talk about different examples of this. I mean, to give an example, Karen Middleton in her piece talks about some of the failings in relation to Indonesia on this front. So, for instance, when Barack Obama came to Australia and announced the Asian pivot, I mean, one of the some major foreign policy, American foreign policy speeches in the last decade was given in Australia. And yet Australia didn't contact Indonesia or other countries to kind of brief them, as you would expect if we're going to kind of bring those countries along. And if you go back even further to Kevin Rudd announcing his Asia-Pacific community idea without consulting regional partners on it, which was one of the reasons possibly that it faltered. I think we tend to still just think immediately about phoning the White House, phoning London, phoning our traditional partners, and we don't have at the forefront of our minds the need to really consider countries in the region, these like-minded partners, as genuine partners.
I suppose it must be something to do with how you divide your cup of energy, just like it is energies, just like it is in personal life. And I mean, you also therefore consider how much we do accord to the US relationship, and whether that is, and I think some of your contributors too talk about that, whether that is really likely to change, and what sort of commitment is behind that, even though we talk about it. Well, we sort of talk about it, don't we?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think, the US alliance is still obviously a very important central part of Australian foreign policy, Australian security policy. I suppose it doesn't need to replace other relationships. It shouldn't, maintaining a strong alliance with the US should not be at the detriment of other relationships in the region. Just to give an example of that on a different front, I think it's been very disappointing that the Pacific step up that we've seen, which has been really well done, I think, by the Australian government to improve its relations with the Pacific. And yes, there's some failings on the climate front, as we heard earlier, but there's been a genuine effort, and yet it's come at the cost of our partnerships in Southeast Asia. Now, we should really, you would expect that Australia should be able to do both, and I think it's similar with the US alliance. I mean, we should be able to maintain a strong US alliance, but also be able to really improve relationships, particularly with countries like Indonesia, with countries like Singapore, Japan, to really elevate those relationships and have those countries at the forefront of our thinking about the region.
Professor Rory Medcalf is one of your contributors, calls therefore for mini-lateralism, which what he calls mini-lateralism as opposed to multilateralism. What are the pros and cons, finally, as you see them, for different sorts of alliances?
Yeah, look, Rory makes a really strong and convincing case, I think, that there's this new trend of these smaller coalitions emerging. I think it's important, and Rory makes this point, to have both the advantages and limitations of those kinds of coalitions, to be aware of them. So the benefits are that we're starting to see countries work together in ways that could continue even if the US does begin to withdraw from Asia. So, and bringing countries like France into a stronger role, and having Australia start to form working relationships with countries like India, Indonesia, Japan, that could outlast the US's strong commitment as it is now. So that's a real positive. I suppose the rider to that is just that there are limitations to these coalitions. I mean, first of all, the more countries you have in a coalition, the weaker the bonds might end up being, or the weaker the commitments. And secondly, it's questionable whether these are really going to translate into strong security or military alliances.
All right, Jonathan, thank you very much indeed for that overview.
Thanks, Geraldine.
Jonathan Perlman, always a pleasure to talk to him, and he's editor of Australian Foreign Affairs, and the new issue, Friends, Allies and Enemies, will be available on Monday. And I do notice, just as a quick follow-up, that the Alliance for Journalists' Freedom, which Peter Gress was setting up, has got a special webcast this coming Tuesday, reporting on China. How do we understand China with no Australian journalists on the ground, which is sort of further to this discussion about how we do understand our region. So you can go to their website. They've collaborated with the Asia Society Australia for that, if you might like to take part.